This is the Big Three Podcast with Brian Robb, Michael Pina, and Rich Levine.
All right, it's the Kyrie Irving is actually a Celtic edition of the Big Three Podcast. My name is Brian Robb here with Boston Sports Journal, joined by Michael Pina of Vice Sports and Rich Levine out on the West Coast. The soap opera is over, gentlemen. And I don't know, I kind of want the last 4 or 5 days of my life back. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, it was a pretty stupid period of time, I think. We all kind of knew.
We need to be a little bit more excited right now. The Celtics have
Kyrie.
I didn't pay any attention. I had full faith this was going to go through. There's no way that they could have backed away from this trade. And the fact that Cleveland settled on a second round pick to make it happen, it's a very Cleveland thing. But more importantly, Kyrie Irving is on the Celtics.
Yeah, Kyrie Irving is a Celtic. I kind of want to get into what Cleveland tried to pull here, at least for a little bit. I kind of riffed on it a couple times in columns this week.
What do you think they tried to pull?
I think this was like them trying to drum up better offers and squeeze their rival because they knew that, you know, they had an out with Isaiah Thomas's hip situation, and, you know, it's clearly two different doctors can have two different opinions on it. And so, I mean, if they had just like gone back to the Celtics and talked to them privately and asked for more, over the weekend, that would have been one thing. But the way they did this, the way it dragged out, the way it was so public, screamed to me that this was just like them trying to, you know, squeeze the Celtics for more or just get someone else to come in with an offer that they could, so they could walk away from this deal.
I think we all agree that the Celtics, even with Isaiah Thomas's hip injury, like the Celtics they gave up a ton here. And for Cleveland, like Isaiah just really needs to be healthy. I know there's like a mesh period with him and like new teammates and whatever, but they just need Isaiah to be healthy when it matters in the spring, and I think he will be. So yeah, I'm perfectly okay with the Celtics giving up what they did. But yeah, I agree with what you're saying, B-Rob. It was kind of Bush League, as you noted on Twitter.
I think it's the opposite. I think the Celtics are trying to pull a fast one.
Really?
I do. I think, and I mentioned this to you guys off the air, but like we kept on waiting for this Isaiah update on an injury, right? Like,
right.
It was like next week. And we're getting so close to the season. We're at the point where like, all right, so we assumed that this guy wasn't going to have surgery anymore because at that point it would have kept him out till after the All-Star break. But like the fact that they were so vague about it, and I told you the second that trade broke. Okay, we'll take it back to this. Typically, when the Celtics make a big move, I feel like they're very sort of methodical and conscientious of how they announce it.
Yep.
Right? I feel like they like to have everything in place. Remember the Gordon Hayward thing? We waited forever to get an official announcement. That Kyrie, the reports came that they traded for Kyrie, and there was a picture of Kyrie in a Celtics jersey on Twitter. Like, not that long. I don't know exactly what it was, but much quicker than
it was very quickly. And then Danny talked very quickly afterwards.
Yeah, it felt to me that they thought that they maybe got a steal and they were trying to push the tempo on this that would make it harder and harder for Cleveland to do anything else about it.
Yeah, they still gave up a lot. Like,
right.
But who are the other options? Like who did Cleveland call in this interim time?
Well, I mean, Zach Lowe wrote about a couple places where, you know, the potential suitors, obviously Phoenix has been talked about forever. There's the rumored Milwaukee deal. Denver, were three of the more prominent teams mentioned. And yeah, no, I mean, it's like, is a team going to get stupid and find a way to top this? The answer obviously was probably not. Yet they, you know, dragged it out as long as possible, you know, kind of just in case. And to your point, Rich, I do think that I think the Celtics, obviously they put a fast one on the media this summer, in a sense, with these non-updates on Isaiah. But I'm pretty sure that, you know, they should have smartly been, I mean, by all accounts, they were upfront with the Cavs on what the situation was here going in these trade talks. And so that's why I think, like, the Cavs pulling this is kind of, you know, BS.
Well, so you don't think that the Cavs? And I'm not accusing the Celtics too much of this. Like, but you don't think the Cavs came across any new information when they did that physical on Isaiah? Like, you think exactly what they were expecting is what they saw when they worked him out or had their doctors look at him?
I mean, maybe it was a situation where the Celtics doctors thought there was a, 10% chance he missed season. The Cavs doctors thought there was a 30% chance or something like that. I think it was something like that, like a kind of. Right. But then I think the Celtics probably in their mind were like, well, this is why we're giving you the Brooklyn pick. Like, because of that risk.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know either way. I guess we should stop speculating.
But, yeah, but I mean, what's your guys' reaction, though, if you're Isaiah, to how the Cavs have kind of played this out?
Well, they've really depressed his market value. I mean, obviously, a lot can happen in a year, and, he can be a tremendous asset for them this season, and he can still get the long-term contract, the big $100 million-plus dollar deal that he's been after for so long, but if there are any hiccups during the season with this hip, teams will be wary. We've seen this happen with, lesser players recently. Donatas Motiejunas comes to mind as someone who's back. The stigma of a canceled deal between the Houston Rockets and the Detroit Pistons, I think it was 2 years ago now. Donatas Motiejunas was, a role player on a pretty good team and kind of a rising piece for the Rockets. And now he's, I think, in China. So I think that had a ton to do with that. And, teams take this stuff seriously. You don't want to pay or commit yourself to someone like Isaiah, who we all had reservations to differing degrees about Isaiah, how he would age. And if he has a hip injury, it could get ugly pretty fast for him.
Yeah, it's funny, like we talked about this, I think when we were in Vegas, about the tough spot that the Celtics and Isaiah are in, where, okay, Isaiah needs to look out for himself right now, but we felt, because of how he felt about the Celtics and what he wanted to be a part of in Boston, that he was going to be able to, at the end of the day, we couldn't have, criticized him for putting him and his family before team, but with the Celtics, it might have been sort of a level situation. But right now, with the way the Cavs handled this, like you said, B-Rob, like, he's going in right now as Isaiah Thomas. A lot can change. A couple dinners with LeBron. Who knows what can happen? But the Cavs have some work to do, I think, in terms of really winning him over and making that a team. A lot more work than I think the Celtics do.
No question. I mean, if I'm Isaiah Thomas right now, I'm just looking out for number one and trying to make myself healthy for the long term. Obviously, that means, you want to play, you want to, have a good year here so you do get paid next summer, but you also don't want to push yourself to the point where, we brought this up, I feel like, in earlier podcasts this summer, where, you're damaging yourself long term and you miss the payday or the long term payday entirely. So, like, If LeBron is like checking out, or if things go awry early in Cleveland, like, that's the situation that could, I feel like, get ugly behind the scenes.
And we don't know how much Kyrie participated or was cause for the drama that has transpired in Cleveland ever since LeBron went there. But that place is just like a circus during the regular season. There will be stretches where LeBron does things on social media, and he makes himself the primary storyline in the entire league. He really loves that attention, and it'll be really interesting just to see how Isaiah copes with that while he's also trying to, as you said, B-Rob, look out for number one and secure a long-term contract here, because this is really his window.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's a different experience, Cleveland, Boston. The reason that the Cavs are relevant at all is because a once in a generation athlete happened to be born 90 miles to, what is it, northeast. It's a reason that they fell apart when LeBron left. Like they are built, like, once he goes, the Cavs are going to be a disaster again. The Celtics, certainly with the current installment of the organization. I mean, this they're built to win in the long term, but the Isaiah and Jay are walking into it's a mess with LeBron. It's a different kind of mess, but if anything happens with him, like that's going to go belly up real quick.
Yeah.
Oh, they're screwed. And there's also these reports now. I've thought for a pretty long time that if LeBron left, there would be really no incentive for Dan Gilbert to own that team. Like, it's just, they're going to just be terrible for a very long time. He won the championship. Cash out. And while the league is as profitable as it is, get, I don't know how much you could get if you sell the Cleveland Cavaliers, but it's got to be at least $1 billion just based on, you know, market prices for teams that have sold recently. I wouldn't be surprised if that dude sold the team if LeBron left. And then Isaiah's probably going to go as well. And Kevin Love's a free agent the year after that. I mean, it's things could get real bad in Cleveland very quickly.
I mean, yep.
Yeah, Gilbert's
sold. Yeah, no, and they have they have a lot of big contracts left over if LeBron leaves. So I don't think it's not like they can totally like tank right away. They still have obviously Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson, like J.R. Smith, all these guys on bloated deals that you could probably get rid of, but not as easily as you would want.
This is,
and then what coach in his right mind is going to ever take that job?
Right.
We're talking in a post-LeBron situation.
Yeah. And this is kind of why I'm still of the mind that the Cavaliers should really look to shop this pick. I it's obviously a double-edged sword here where, you know, you want to keep the pick if you think he's going, because it could be a top five pick and you could build around, one of these potential franchise players in this year's draft, but you really should try to maximize him staying. And the best way to do that is to, you know, try to find a deal that adds an impact player with the pick. So it's just a really interesting situation. I'm really lucky I'm not the GM of the Cleveland Cavaliers.
No, that's a tough gig at this point. Do you guys think anything's going to come out of this in terms of publicly both sides talking about negotiations, how this went? Or do you think that both sides will kind of stay quiet and, you know, we'll just hear the behind the scenes rumblings?
I think the Celtics will stay quiet. I don't, like, unless something happens or particularly rub Wick the wrong way, you know, he's the only one, I think, with a history of, and I love Wick, but the history of you know, speaking his mind sometimes like that. But like, I think it would much more likely happen from Cleveland's standpoint.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I'm just really looking forward to opening night now. That's just going to be one of the best. I can't even think of a more intriguing opening night matchup. Like, it's, we talked about it before and how awesome that's going to be and how fortuitous the schedule makers were when they did that. But this is going to be just absolutely insane. As plot 17, Jay Crowder guarding Gordon Hayward. Like, it's just going to be amazing.
It's too bad. Oh, man. Isaiah's not going to play. We assume he's not going to play. That's the only bad part of it. But you're right. There's enough storylines to where that doesn't matter.
That's what you think.
Wait, when?
He's going to halftime. He's going to rip off the warm-ups, come out. It's going to be amazing. Great theater.
Yeah, so the only thing that would make it better, and I think we're a little biased, but I think objectively speaking, it's still the same. If this was in Boston, I think it would probably be a little bit better. I don't know. Is it crazier for Kyrie to go back there?
Yeah. I think that.
Yeah, because he wanted out.
Like, Isaiah's going to get a huge ovation here.
Yeah.
So is Crowder. When they play here.
I know, but they also have the relationship with the fans is one thing, but Isaiah, they cannot be happy with.
Oh, no. I mean, there's no question. Isaiah's fuel to the fire would be something in terms of if he's willing to talk, which he hasn't been to this point. But I think just in terms of on-court dynamics and the crowd, I think Kyrie going back there is a little bit more compelling, even though I agree with you, the Isaiah Celtic relationship is more.
Cause
Yeah,
because I was.
Sorry, Rich, go ahead.
I would say real quick, I was at LeBron's return in Cleveland when he came back, his first game back in Miami with Miami. And people are just really like really nice in the Midwest. they don't have the same hate that that East Coasters do. Or at least they don't project it in that way necessarily. At least I mean maybe Browns fans do, but I found that they're a little nicer than I expected. Sorry, go ahead, Mike. What were you going to say?
Yeah, I was just going to say something kind of random, but over under 40 points on Kyrie's first game as a Celtic.
I think under. I think he's going to look to be especially whatever the opposite of a hog is. A good team player.
Yeah, I'll take a line under there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I think that's a good number, Mike.
I think he's going to just go ballistic. Is what I think.
But that's not. I don't want that. Like that's not the kind. And I understand the circumstances. I understand this is maybe a one game thing. But it's not like this is the last time you're probably going to see Cleveland in a meaningful game this year. Like I would, and I get it. But I think I want Kyrie to come here. And I know he's talking to Kyrie Wick. I love the hashtag. I love the mentality. I like that he wants to come and be the star. But like, I also want a guy that's going to make it clear from the beginning, like, I'm the star, but this is about the Celtics. I have Gordon Hayward right next to me. I have Al Horford, you know, in the paint. Like, I don't want it to be the Kyrie show.
No, I'm with you. I think that's why, like, can we talk about the over-under number for a little bit here? Because, like, yeah. I think it was, what's it, 56 and a half?
Yeah, 56 and a half, and then Bovada came out today with 55 and a half. So there's a little discrepancy in the market, but...
Which is still second highest in the league. Is that right? Yeah, I don't understand this at all. I mean, I've been talking about it since the Gordon Hayward signing. I think the Celtics are going to be worse in the regular season, and we're talking about how Kyrie is trying to fit into this offense, and there's going to be like severe hiccups. I think there will be nights when he really wants to go off and shoot for 50, and you know, ideally he'll play like James Harden did, I think, in his first season with the Houston Rockets, where he's kind of the facilitator who's also the primary option. But Harden that year didn't really have a number two, and you know, Kyrie is with two other all-star caliber players, so it's interesting. I'm kind of shocked that the number is that high, and I'm really considering betting the under.
What is it again? Did you say 55?
It was initially 56 and a half.
I mean, but who? That's so bad, guys.
Yeah, but they won 53 last year, and they performed like what was it, like their Pythagorean win theorem or whatever was like 49 or something. So it's like
It's just hard to compare because, like, they have two guys on the team this year that would have been the best player on last year's team. And I know you could say, I understand the Isaiah situation. I think that was sort of in a vacuum, like the perfect moment. I think Hayward and Kyrie are both better than Isaiah.
I think Isaiah last year was better than Kyrie would have been, but who knows?
Yeah, whatever. But yeah, either way, I mean, I don't know. I think you have the East, and I'm still concerned about the lack of rebounding, and you know, we talked about that a bunch, but like I wouldn't be shocked if they won 60 games. I mean, everyone's got something to prove. I mean, I think they have that base there. The organization is just in such good shape, just sort of waiting for this to happen. So should we do this, Mike, instead of you making an illegal bet on the under? You want to do one, an unofficial one right here on the podcast? Rob can be our witness.
What was our bet last time? It was like, will Al Horford win a championship with the Celtics? And then we went out to dinner that night and we didn't even talk about it.
I know, we're too busy catching up on life, man. I don't think Horford's going to win a title in Boston. And I think the Celtics are going to win more than 56 games this year. Want to do like a parlay? I don't know. I just don't. So Al's not going to sign an extension in Boston. Do you think that's going to happen?
I could see him re-signing for. Well, I think he's going to opt in first of all, because he's not going to turn down $30 million when he's whatever 32 or 33. I feel like, unless the Celtics, you know, pull some Paul Pierce on him and be like, okay, reduce your cap number now, and then we'll give you more years, maybe to, you know, and that might save the money in the luxury tax at that point too. So, I think that could be in play.
I'm looking at his numbers right now. Like, so how many years? So he's 30 right now. Yeah, did he turn 31 this summer?
Next season, I would guess.
Yeah, he's 31.
Yeah, his game's going to age really
well.
Yeah,
so like,
he's such a smart player. He's a
maybe
big who can shoot the
after race. Next season, in that player option year, he opts out and the Celtics are like, opt out here and we'll give you two more at 20.
That's not this year.
I think a lot of this depends on Mr. Anthony
Right,
Davis,
I mean, obviously.
And we'll see what that is.
Well, because that adds, I was going to put a little caveat in my bet, and I'll say, Al Horford won't win a title as a starter.
Oh, stop it, Rich.
I think seventh man Al Horford in 2021 is going to be a fantastic compliment. Yeah. Well, no, but listen, the extension, right, like you said, he's going to have to take less money. I don't think in 2 years. Yeah, who even knows what the world's going to look like in 2 years?
Yeah,
I'm nervous.
What was the other one? So, yeah, let's get back to the over-under. B-Rob, what is your weigh-in as the tiebreaker here?
I'd take slightly under. I think, like, mid-50s is, like, 54, 55 is probably where I'd go. Because while I do think, like, I agree with Rich, like, if everything goes right and I believe Brad Stevens can kind of put this thing together very quickly. And with that combined of how bad the East should be, that brings 60 into play. But at the same time, I think one injury could really derail things.
Unfortunately, at this point of the podcast, we experienced some technical difficulties. So the recording, the last 20 minutes of the recording was lost in no man's land. So that's it for now. Sorry for the abrupt ending, but we will get these issues figured out and be back with you guys for a full podcast next week. In the meantime, if you're still listening, please subscribe to the Big 3 Podcast, Google Play, iTunes, SoundCloud, anywhere you find us. Thanks for the support, guys.